If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Welcome to the Completely Unnecessary Podcast, live from Portland at Retro Gaming Expo 2015, alongside Ian Ferguson.
Howdy.
I'm Pat Condry. They're excited. You guys hear me? We have an action. Thank you. We have an action-packed 45 minutes because we don't need a whole hour, and we're going to talk about a few things today. But first, we got a bunch of Dum Dum Pops. I'm going to throw out. Remember Dum Dums?
Yeah.
These might take your eye out, so you have to sign a waiver. You have no liability.
Throw something to the crowd.
I'm going to just wing some of these down at you there. We love Dum Dum. I'm just trying to hit the camera over there.
Oh, that was...
If you get the mystery flavor, you win a prize.
No, you don't. We have no prizes.
I feel like one of those, you know, people throwing out t-shirts.
There you go. We got a few more.
Hit the
cup
fans.
We're bribing you with sugar. You say hit the cup fans? Does everyone still have their eyeballs?
You too.
Oh, he's trying for the hat.
Up.
Your dentist will love us.
You and the yellow, maybe for you.
Oh, yeah!
Connection.
My goodness.
All right, so we're talking about stuff besides Dum Dum Pops. We're talking about the 30th anniversary of the NES is tomorrow, guys, in the U.S. Do you believe that?
What else are we talking about? We'll be talking about limited run games, which is, it's actually exactly what it says. It's a new program that is going to do physical copies of independent games, and we have some thoughts on that.
And your Q&A. Ian, what's going on in Ferguson land?
I'm super fucking nervous.
Why? We all love you here. There's no reason to be nervous. There's only, you know, 6,000 people here and... You know, a couple hundred watching every move you make, every twitch, every drop of sweat coming off that forehead.
Yep.
That pink, ever embarrassing face that you have. There's no reason to be nervous at all. Absolutely none. No, it's fine. So you buy anything yet here?
No, I haven't left behind our booth except for to go to the bathroom.
Did you cry in the bathroom this time?
No, I didn't cry in the bathroom this time. That'll probably happen later.
You're going to admit to me 2 months later that you cried during the convention?
Yeah, it happens all the time.
And that, you know, I'm here for you, Ian.
I'm a crier.
I'm a crier, too.
No, you're not.
I cry during movies. And
crocodile tears.
Shut up. That was a little... People didn't like that. That was a little mean. A little mean-spirited. I like this wave we got going. Every year, there's more, I guess... Added to the experience here at Retro Gaming Expo, so you have the waving.
Now we
banner.
Have animation.
We have animation. Just get our faces up there, just waving along.
No.
People keep asking about my book. It is getting made. More details tomorrow at the Pat the NES Punk panel at 12:30. Yes, I'm already plugging a panel and wasting time. All right, let's talk about your topic, which I know nothing about. At all, but it's this hardcore gaming.
Okay.
I'm really prepared.
So there is a, the exact name is, I believe, Limited Run Games. And it's actually exactly what it says. And they are doing limited runs of games right now for Vita and PS4. And these are essentially independent games that normally wouldn't get a physical release. Each one that they do is being numbered like a comic book. And so, you know, the first one is...
Serial is for each one or for each run of different games?
Each game has a different number. So
the first game, they're all number one.
Then two, then three, then four.
Even on different systems?
Yes, yeah. Their entire line is going to be numbered in sequential order.
Okay, it's interesting.
I think it's interesting because
people like physical copies. I think everyone in this room probably does. If you're at a retro gaming exposition, you're probably into cartridges and CDs and having the real deal. I think this is great for people who want physical copies and they don't want to change over to digital. What kind of scares me about it, though, is the way they market it with the numbers and the... I mean, they're called limited run games. I always get nervous when things like that pop up because I feel like they might be preying on a impulsive collector community sort of
idea. That would never happen.
Idea.
There would be no one ever trying to come out with a shoddy product to prey on the collector
no,
community.
No, that wouldn't happen.
Not at all. But
that's not.
So, but that begs a question about then: are they producing these first and foremost for to have quality games, or because you know, first and foremost, that's what you should be caring about: is the game good? Not this is a limited run of a new game. That's so weird because they can always make more of any new product, which I always say. Like, it's sort of a fallacy
yes.
when it comes to the new collectability of new stuff doesn't make any sense. Most of it's collectible because most of it's thrown out. There's not a lot left.
Or it's just, yeah, it's on production.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the double thing. It's like, okay, it's nice to get physical copies, but is it going to be quality? And is it really just to make a buck on the, you know, the growing collector market? People see limited and they want it regardless of what it is.
So the system, you said Vita?
I believe right now they're just doing Vita and PS4.
Do you think that can sustain itself just for, at least for Vita? Is there still a huge market for, or big market enough for a Vita, for limited run games?
I guess it depends on how limited the run is.
This is where I really need my MacBook to look up what these games are. That would be fantastic.
They only announced one and I don't remember the name because I suck. I don't know. I mean, the reason why they're doing it with Vita and PS4, though, is because Sony is very good about letting you do very small print runs. So they're very friendly to indies. Retro City Rampage got a notoriously small print run, and now that's worth quite a bit of money. So because Sony lets independent developers and publishers do this, that's why they chose those two platforms.
So full retail packaging.
Full, yes.
Full game. Are the games bug-free?
They're guaranteed bug-free. They were simply told to be bug-free.
No, but
they complied.
But in all seriousness, this is sort of the route. If you still want cartridges or physical media, this could be the future, like 5 years down the line, 10 years down the line, as long as there's still like a CD-ROM drive or optical media drive, that you can have these companies, if companies like Sony will allow it, to put out physical media.
Yes.
So in that respect, it might never go away. You know, So say Shovel Knight 4 comes out in 2030, we'll just say. And by then, hopefully there's the PS6 that has an optical drive.
I think you're putting a lot of faith in the console market.
I am. The whole point is this, that even if you want to get a physical version of that, maybe the company decides, hey, it won't cost us that much money to print out they won't be Blu-rays anymore. They'll be holographic cubes.
Yes.
And it'll cost them $1.50 each.
And you eat them.
You eat them? You implant them in your brain?
Uh-huh.
Like, what was that movie about the millennium where like you had the implant experience? Virtuosity or something? Does anyone remember that movie at all? Strange Days. I was going to say End of Days, but that was Arnold Schwarzenegger. Yeah. That was not it. Strange Days. Anyway, the whole point is that this is great because if a company wants to do it, it won't be a huge cost to them to put out optical media in comparison to a heavy cartridge. And if people want to buy it, they'll buy it in a small run. Everyone wins. That's where we're moving towards probably 10, 20 years from now, most likely.
Do you think the PS6 will be in an Atari 5200 case then?
they'll find the tooling for it?
Yeah.
I don't know.
It might be clear.
So we'll talk about... I'm so excited. We're on the cusp of the NES turning 30 years old in the U.S. It's like, should we bake a cake for that? What should we do? Invite him out to Chuck E. Cheese, you know, with all his friends.
I think at 30, the Nintendo would rather just take it easy. Maybe just have a quiet dinner with some friends and not really party.
Or maybe have that weird conversation with their parents about, well, you're not really doing much for your life yet. You're not young anymore. Not that this happened to me. But it's strange that, first of all, that it's 30 years because these are, you know, the consoles we grew up with. But to see sort of the impact, we're at a retro gaming expo, and you can make a pretty good argument that without the NES...
We wouldn't be here.
There wouldn't be not just the retro gaming expo, but we wouldn't care about consoles, at least here, as much. People always say, well, if Nintendo didn't succeed, something else would have came along. Not necessarily to that extent.
Right. And that's exactly it. Nintendo, kickstarted everything by getting their system into stores at a time when no one wanted to carry it, carry anything video game related. If Nintendo hadn't kind of pulled that double switch with Rob and reignited people's interest in games, yes, video games wouldn't have gone anywhere. We still would have had computer games. But would we have had something that would have had the same impact as Super Mario, packed in, I mean, not immediately, but packed in with an NES that, I mean, had people running out to stores to get them?
I think it's important that you had sort of a leader in the gaming world at that time when, again, after the video game crash 83, 84, it was splintered and there was no faith. So if you looked at it, okay, say, let's just say the NES even was a minor success, like the Master System. You had the Master System, you had Atari trying to still push out the 7800 in the late 80s. The Intellivision was hanging on for dear life until like 87, 88. People forget that.
Yep.
So imagine that market without a leader.
Yeah, imagine the Nintendo's not there and all you have is the Master System. And I like the Master System, but is that really going to push it into mainstream? Or is it just going to keep it as a hobbyist sort of thing? And I think it wouldn't ever leave the basement, essentially.
You understand like the cultural sort of touchstone that Nintendo sort of captured. When you had all of a sudden, I mean, it happened in the early 80s, but then you had nothing in the mid 80s. And then all of a sudden you have Mario on, you know, T-shirts, you have a TV show.
Cereal.
Merchandising. And I think you needed that to ignite a whole new generation to video games.
Yes, exactly.
Because not a lot of people had computers, were super expensive.
Right.
And up until the probably 93-ish sort of year. Computers were really expensive. It's not like, oh, they were like $2,000 in 85. That's like $4,000 now. That's not a computer in every home.
No.
That's like a computer in some people's homes, mostly older people. And if they had kids, sure, but it's not like when I had my computer, you were playing like games with graphics that were good enough to even decipher a Mario, or you know what I mean, or a character like Samus or Kid Icarus. You were playing XT games with awful CGA color.
Everything was in pink and cyan.
Yeah, and you had joysticks. There was no gamepads on PCs until the late 80s, early 90s. The Gravis PC gamepad. That was until like 89-90. So it was not set up to succeed until Nintendo sort of kicked the door in. And sort of, here we go again. Master System didn't have a good mascot. Alex Kidd, you would not have seen an Alex Kidd TV show, even if there was no Nintendo. That was not going to happen. It didn't have the chutzpah, we'll just say, to capture everyone, those games. Not to say they're bad games, but they didn't like a feeling of like rapture when you played those. Like the first time you played Super Mario Brothers, you remember where you were, what you were doing. The first time I played Alex Kidd, I couldn't tell you what even year it was. You know, like it's like
no, I don't know.
All right, it's cool, but you know what I mean? It's not.
It was at some point in the youth. Yeah.
Some point in the youth.
In the youth. I mean, Mario, I remember clear as day yelling at my parents to avoid the mushrooms because I thought they were poisonous and that they would die. Wasn't until the next day that we realized that they were a power-up. But to kind of...
And that might have influenced Ian's, I don't know, high school behavior, but we'll go with that later. We'll talk that later. But it's important to also remember that, you know, Nintendo sort of... They took a big risk. I mean, there's a great article about Frank Cifaldi, the early days of Nintendo in the fall of 85, where it was a ragtag team of Howard Phillips and, like, you know, 8, 9, 10 other guys setting up shop in northern New Jersey and in New York City areas, literally setting up display units at malls and at department stores and breaking them down every day and literally person to person trying to sell video games. That's so weird to think about, but
so
that's
ragtag,
how it was.
In fact, we don't even know most of the release dates of a lot of those early
games. Like we always say October 18th, you know, for the NES, which is like, that's like the weekend where it probably happened.
Sure.
You know, but then Super Mario Brothers, we're not entirely sure when that was released. You know, so that's
unheard of. I mean, today.
But it's like we say October 18th, but maybe it was a couple weeks later.
When was Final Fantasy VII released?
You're at a retro gaming convention. That should be.
I was trying to prove a point. Not 1997, but you know, most people will remember that. No one felt the need to remember Mario.
We were still in this black hole area of video games where no one cared. You know what I mean? Like yes. It was sort of like Nintendo of Japan wasn't counting on it to be a success. That's why they put a small team.
Toy.
Together.
Yeah.
They put together the minimal amount of team to see if it would work. There wasn't a huge marketing blitz. They did have commercials, they did advertise, but we're talking a small region of the country, a very small region for the test market. You know, and if that failed, we'll see you in 6 years for the Super Nintendo. You know, like, that's what would have happened, most likely.
I feel it's interesting, too, because people, like you said earlier, people say that if Nintendo hadn't come along, something else will. But if you look at, say, PCs in the 80s, games coming out on PC, that's developing as its own platform. Consoles, they were on divergent paths. So if the Nintendo didn't succeed, but PCs kept going and people started gaming on PCs, there's no guarantee you would have seen any more consoles in the United States.
Yeah, it could have been like, you look at other areas of the world where Nintendo wasn't big.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, people had it in Europe, but it wasn't big at all.
Right, and it was computers, and that could have happened here.
Could have.
Yeah.
If the price came down, but you'd still be waiting until like maybe early 90s for it to start to kick up, then you get Doom in 93, you know, then it's like, oh, here we are. But imagine that you have 8 full years of video games sort of being not entirely on the back burner, but not having like a stalwart leader to push the culture of the, you know, gaming forward.
Right.
And that's what you're looking at. That said, though, there's obviously the negative connotation of how Nintendo succeeded doing that, which was by strong arming distributors in the U.S.
Yes.
And threatening game publishers and doing stuff that was deemed illegal, but we'll just glance past that for the third. That's like
it's a celebration of Nintendo.
When you're a few years old, you could have wrote on the wall with crayons. We're not going to hold that against you totally. Who cares if there was a Nintendo lawsuit almost every year the NES was out, you know? And Nintendo was probably in the wrong for most of them. They lawsuits with Tengen, lawsuits with Galoob.
Oh God! I forgot the Galoob stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, they didn't want the Game Genie coming out.
Nope.
Like, oh, our system's holy.
You're ruining the period.
Yeah. So it wasn't all, you know, all positive, but they needed to get there because Sega wasn't investing any money really pushing the Master System. You know.
No. And Atari was pissing the bed. I mean,
no, yeah, Atari was.
They were finished.
Atari's like, hey, we got this 7800. It's like 4 years old. Here you go. And we're like, this is awful. No,
you've got Commando.
Yeah. So I mean, other than that, though, it's so beloved that I would still argue that for a convention like this, if the NES wasn't big, I don't think retro gaming would have taken off the way it did, or
certainly not in hindsight.
Oh yeah. I mean, you go out to the floor here, and almost everyone has NES games for sale.
All I have is NES games for sale.
So there you have it. It's like that market share of whatever it was, 90% in the U.S. for gaming. It's insane. That'll never be repeated by any company.
No.
You're never going to have, especially with indie games now, the amount of people that have computers and mobile, 90% market share is almost like, that's why Nintendo and people would switch and be synonymous term of video games and Nintendo. You had old people say, let's you have Nintendo when you could have had a computer game or you could have had, you know, a Master System. And every video game they refer to as Nintendo. That's insane.
Yeah, it became a generic trademark.
Imagine if people are looking at your GameCube and saying, oh, you're playing PlayStation.
Yeah.
Just imagine that. And that's how important the NES birthday is besides the most eclectic library of games of any console.
That's another thing I love about the NES. There's a lot of not good games on the Nintendo, but a lot of those awful games were trying something new and different, and that's why they were awful. You saw a lot of experimentation on the Nintendo that moved, you know, was very influential to later generations of gaming. It was a console where people, I mean, just threw shit at the wall and saw, you know, waited to see what stuck.
Yeah, especially those unlicensed companies like Color Dreams. I mean, the games aren't the best quality, but at least the concepts are different.
Raid 2020, now that's a different concept.
I want to explain that is for most of the audience who fortunately have not played the game.
So Raid 2020 is a game where you have to kill a drug dealer. And you start off on a dock fighting seagulls and really seedy-looking individuals. But eventually it takes you into space. So you end up
going. You get a jetpack, right? You get a jetpack?
Yeah, and you have to play a really horrible floaty level, and then you kill the Shadow or something. But not the radio, the Shadow, the evil crime lord. And you spend the entire game picking up, like, huge bricks of cocaine, and they give you extra lives. But you're the anti-drug agent.
Are you a reseller of cocaine in the game? Is that what you're
no,
flipping the cocaine?
I'm guessing you're taking it to a storage locker.
They don't
explain this.
Yeah, so it's just the personality of those games. You would not see games that strange on the Super Nintendo.
Wally Bear and the No Gang.
all during the no game.
I mean, this is why people find the Nintendo interesting.
Chiller.
All of this weird shit.
There's even weird licensed games that are just, like, bizarre.
Space Shuttle Project, which Space I Shuttle sold Project. Today.
You always bring up Color A Dinosaur. Yep. So bold in its simplicity.
Yeah.
You know, the only game where it's exactly what the title is, and that's it. No more, no less.
It's even kind of misleading, because you don't even really color it. It's just kind of a paint by numbers. It's... I wish
paint a dinosaur by numbers?
I just want to cram there so you can put like mustaches on them. But no, it's just find the blank spot and hit fill.
You want a mustache on your Stegosaurus wearing a Walkman? Is that what you want?
Why the Walkman?
Someone wearing Walkmans in the game.
What?
Have you played Color A Dinosaur?
Yes.
We play Color A Dinosaur.
Yeah,
I have.
I usually color the pterodactyl.
Yeah, there's like radical ones like on a skateboard and one has a Walkman. You didn't know
that? The pterodactyl's not real rad. I just like pterodactyls and triceratopses.
The point before this segment goes into the earth is that the NES library is just awesome in the range of good to bad. In sort of ordinary sort of concepts, or save the princess to save your girl shackled up whose clothes rot away after every level. That's Men of Speech. That's the sort of diversity of gameplay we're talking about.
And then they turned it into a Bible game.
They turned it into a Bible game.
Sunday fun day.
And we'll leave that for another time. So anything else going on the 30th anniversary of the NES? I mean, we have a new console being made like to play NES games here. You know, like this isn't going away. NES games will be played 100 years from now. Maybe not in the cartridge form,
But somehow or another. I think everyone tomorrow should go outside and fire their zapper in the air.
Just fire it up?
Yeah. Just light it up. Light up the sky with your zapper.
All right, you want to do a Q&A or
why the heck not?
Throw more candy out that we don't have. Throw out bottles of water. I'm so happy no one got hurt because I'd be liable. I think I didn't sign like a waiver for insurance or anything. So, any questions for Ian and I? We got about 25 minutes.
Just go ahead and line up, maybe.
Would it be lining up be easier? I think line up would be easier because then we'd be able to hear you better. You want to line up? Make a line in the front row here. I don't know if we have a microphone, but no one wants to. Everyone's. Don't be shy. You and I are very affable. You, sir, in the Chicago Cubs hat. You know what? If the Mets don't win, I want to win. Cubs deserve it. It's been 107 freaking years.
Yeah, holy shit. First century.
So I'm okay, as long as the American League doesn't win. So what's your. Oh, we have a microphone. Awesome. We don't have to edit in the text when I do this. We can hear you.
So I had a question regarding if you guys have done any
closer
DIY console restoration. Recently I tried to make my own Retrobrite and it didn't go so well. I tried to get rid of the yellow on my SNES.
With the meringue?
I used hydrogen, really concentrated hydrogen peroxide and OxyClean.
Yep, that's what you're supposed to use, right?
And there's one other, like the.
So what happened? You blew up your apartment? What happened?
No. I don't know if it just got the mixture not.
Not correct.
But it came out really washy. It wasn't clean. It was.
You mean the color? It was washy.
Really, like,
I've never tried. The question is about Retrobrite, which is a way to lighten like an old Commodore, yellow Commodore.
What you're doing is you're reversing the chemical reaction that causes it to yellow.
Yes.
I have a buddy who did Retrobrite on all of his consoles, and it turned out beautifully. He had a yellowing PC Engine CD, and I mean it's bright, bright white now. So, I mean I've never done it, and I mean I know the recipe for Retrobrite is. It's not something I want to mess around with. But I know it works. It could just have been the mix you used. But I've never done it personally.
Does it work on every plastic or only certain ones, though?
I mean, it's supposed to work on Super... I mean, at least everyone uses it for Nintendo, Super Nintendo. Like I said, he did it on PC Engine. Anything that discolors because of the flame-retarding chemicals should, in theory, go back to white.
And it's from ultraviolet rays, right?
Yeah, you have to... That's what actually I was going to ask. The big thing is you have to coat it, and then you put it in...
I set it out in the sun pretty much for the entire day and slipped it.
They say sometimes if you're doing... if you're doing it with sunlight, you might need 48 hours.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks.
I'm too lazy to try. That's my answer. I'm too lazy to. I can't even solder. Yeah. Solder? Is that how you spell it?
Solder.
Solder.
What was the first console you ever bought with your own money?
I can answer that easy. It was... Oh, shit, no, I can't. It was either a Game Boy... it was either a Game Boy or a Sega Genesis. My brother and I, when we were growing up, we lived in an apartment, and the landlord was very cool, and we raked leaves in the fall, and he gave us enough money, and it was 2 years in a row. I can't remember which came first, but 1 year was a Game Boy, and the other year was the Genesis, and it was entirely with our own cash.
I was going to say Super Nintendo. You guys know the story of that, for the most part. But it was actually earlier in the year... The Master System 2 was my own money. I think it was my allowance at Kitty City, which that segment still has to come out from the podcast last time, where we just have a 10-minute makeout session with Kitty City. So I think it was only like, I want to say like $75, the Master System 2, because I mean at that point
it was cheap.
So I think that's what my first one was. Hello.
Hi. Do either of you collect reproduction games and reproduction cartridges? And if so, which one is which one would you say is like a must-have aside from a Mr. Gimmick?
I don't collect them. I enjoy playing. Like a Mr. Gimmick is something that that'd be worth it to me because I love the game. But in terms of to say you collect repros is sort of like a strange sort of term to me.
But it is something people do.
I understand, but to me it's just sort of I'm in the realm of the games that existed during that time. That's the way I sort of look at it. So I sort of stay away from that. But I don't know.
I have a friend who makes repros for as a hobby, and I have a couple. But like, I mean, same as him, I wouldn't say I collect them. But for my birthday, he usually makes me a repro. So this year, he made me. If you've ever played Snoopy's Silly Sports Spectacular for the NES in Japan, it had a different license. It had a Disney license, so it was Donald Duck. Mm-hmm. So he made me a repro of that. And the year before, he did me an actual cartridge of. A My Little Pony Mega Man 3 ROM hack.
Not surprised. I think what it comes down to is that do you care as much as a collector to have a cartridge for basically a ROM that you can just download or put on a flash drive? Like, if you just care about playing the game, you don't need to spend the extra money on a cartridge. Like, may or may not be cannibalized, which bothers me a little bit, versus just downloading the ROM and playing it.
I think it's different depending on the game. I think for something like Mr. Gimmick, it's cool to have the repro, but something like Pirate's Booty, which is the Pan-Asian porn games, just download the ROM.
And have a ball.
Yeah, flash. Yeah, they're a great time.
Have a great time.
They're amazing.
Playing slot machines in hopes of seeing
with
skin.
Save states. Just save so states. You can see a pixel
not,
move.
I'm not saying if I did that in college or not.
I did. I'll say it. I did it.
Hello.
Hey. With the Wii U continuing to fade and fade and fade and all the talk of the NX6, am I crazy to worry about Zelda Wii U like going the way of like Star Fox 2?
I think so. I don't think it'll go the way of Star Fox 2. I think you'll see it.
I think you'll see a dual release.
I think you'll see it. I think they could do a dual release, yeah, exactly, just like they did Twilight Princess, or you'll see it pushed to the next system. At this point, though, as much as I do love the Wii U, I am fairly convinced we're not going to see Zelda Wii U on the Wii U. But I think they're far enough along. I think it's a good enough idea. They obviously put a lot of time in the concept and the art, that I think it'll easily just get pushed to the next platform.
I will be more optimistic in saying, since every Nintendo... Well, they did have Hyrule Warriors. That's not a real Zelda game. I would hold that hope that every NES console gets a Legend of Zelda game.
Huh? Every NES console? Nintendo a chicken console. In every pot?
I'm tired, Ian. I'm very tired. I was preparing my new NES Punk video for my panel tomorrow. What? Oh.
Wait, what?
No, I'm still doing them. So I think it's going to come out. I think we'll see a dual release. I'm still going to be shocked if I thought it would be 2017. You said as well for the NX?
I said late 2016.
Oh, yeah, that would be the very
And I think that's what they're actually shooting for based on current info.
But to announce it at E3 next year, potentially, or show it off there, only giving you like 4 months in between versus starting to ship it, that's like not a big lead time for the publicity and hype. That's a whole other conversation, though, for another podcast.
Okay, yeah, sure.
I was wondering if there had ever been any game or console that you had regretted purchasing because it was maybe too expensive, or you overpaid, or it was just terrible, like terrible experience afterwards.
I spoke about Three Stooges in the past. I mean, I like the game. It's a three-star game according to a certain book that's going to be published. But the fact of the matter was, when you're smaller and when you only get like a $2 a week allowance, it's a lot of money to spend like $55 plus tax at Electronic Boutique at Wibber Center in New Jersey. So it's like your whole life is flushed away when you have no money when you're like 10 years old.
And you buy a shit game.
It's a three-star game. It's better than average. I think so. So it was just a feeling of emptiness. I always, after that point, I played it at night, late at night, and I still remember that feeling of being gutted. So after that, whenever I got a new game, I always played it like after school during the day. Being at night was almost, playing the game at night always depressed me, and I was like, wow, I gotta mow the lawn and take out garbage for another 8 months to get another game. So it was just sort of, because I didn't get a lot of games as a kid. I got them birthday, Christmas.
Why nighttime, though? I mean, why?
Because my parents took me to the Electronic Boutique in Wibber Center, New Jersey. It took me at like 7:30 at night. My dad had to work.
I'm just saying, why did playing games at night from that point on make you sad?
It was just sort of a paranoia of repeating that feeling of disappointment with
Three
Stooges.
Fair enough. I gotcha.
You want to have a childhood psychology discussion?
Well, I mean, I didn't really need to go any further than that.
We have all the time in the world. We don't have only 15 minutes left, but listen, you didn't get a chance to answer that.
Yeah.
Hey, Pat.
Hey.
Since I guess you kind of already said that you were going to keep doing Pat the NES Punk videos, or am I wrong?
There's one coming out, so they're still going on.
Okay, one of the questions I was going to ask is if you're going to keep on doing them for a while, or I guess another question I could ask was what was your most favorite episode that you've ever done of Pat the NES Punk?
All right, this is a Pat question. That was anticipation. You bitching the whole time while filming it was great. But no, it wasn't the favorite one.
I don't like acting.
I still think one of the finest moments ever in any of my videos was when Frank coached me at track and field.
I knew that was what you were going to say. That's your Criterion Collection episode.
What's that?
That's your Criterion Collection episode.
Collection episode?
Criterion Collection.
Oh, Criterion Edition, if I did one. No. Yeah, I think that sort of encapsulated the series of being really goofy and... but still having some reverence to the system and track and field. I don't know, I just liked it. I just thought it was fun. You guys see that video?
I remember it being really hot, and we were outside on a track.
Except I was in a silver sweatsuit.
It was really hot.
And not a sweatsuit-like material. You're literally supposed to sweat in the suit, the silver suit. So the girl I was dating at the time, we weren't really far into the relationship, but when I get up on a Sunday morning, I'm like, yeah, I'm going to put on this... like silver, like heat inducing suit at 90 degrees. I'm gonna go film and I'll be seeing you in a couple hours. She's just like, okay. It's just like, all right. And I come back and probably could have passed out, really. We did a lot of running, but that was my favorite thing.
Thanks, man.
Right. He's not dying yet. Someday he will. Someday he'll retire and just have a really bad breakdown and just sell off all his games. And then there'll be no more NES Pump videos. Hey.
Are you worried that the Wii U will fade into obscurity like the Sega Dreamcast?
I don't think the Dreamcast has faded into obscurity.
Dreamcast is beloved.
Yeah, I mean...
beloved by a certain...
those certain Sega people. I know you're going to say the Sega people. You should have said the Sega people.
I mean, I think the Dreamcast cemented its place in video game history, and I think the Wii U will too.
You can't slam the door on the Wii U because there'll still be games made for probably a few years. Maybe not to the same strength, but I think... Look what happened with the GameCube.
Yeah, I mean, everyone figured that one was going to slide away, and now it's... I mean, at least from where I sit in a store, I can't keep GameCubes in stock, and I can't keep GameCube games on the shelf.
And that'll probably
sell super, super well.
And that's probably going to be the analogy to the Wii U, is the GameCube.
Right.
Most likely. You're going to have those first-party games that were all big gangbusters.
Yeah.
You're going to have, like, the handful of third-party ones people like, and then... the other ones, no one cares about, but,
Yeah, but, when you have games like Splatoon, Smash Brothers, Mario Kart 8, and then stuff like Bayonetta 2, Wonderful 101, you have a small library, but you have a really good one.
Yeah. Fear not, Pikachu. Fear not.
So, Pat, it's great to see you again. 4 years in a row.
Go back and watch my first ever Retro Gaming Expo panel, 2011. You were this big, and you gave me shit back then. Every year you give me shit.
No, I have a genuine question. Okay. So, since you seem like such an avid Vita lover, do you think that Sony will make another PlayStation handheld?
Sony actually said that they're not going to.
They didn't say that. They said the climate was unhealthy.
You see why I don't like this kid?
Yeah. They're not going to make another handheld.
I think, well, Sony, you can even learn that your failures, you shouldn't repeat them, I think. And they can't.
They did it twice.
Why is
maybe not a third time. So, what's that?
I said, then why is Nintendo making another console?
Because Nintendo has a shitload of money.
But,
and they can.
Yeah.
Sony's losing billions of dollars. They're bleeding money. So it's like, even they're smart enough to realize that they don't make computers anymore, Sony. You realize they say they make a lot of computers? Like, they don't sell TVs anymore. They market them, but no one buys them because they're expensive. And you can buy an LCD TV for like $300 instead of like $1,000. So like Sony, the way Sony's making money is coming thinner and thinner, unfortunately. So that's the danger. So they're going to be very careful what they're doing.
Yeah, they can't put the R&D into it and risk the money. The PSP was
kickstarting ideas.
Yeah, internally. I mean, the PSP was a moderate success. The Vita, as much as I like it, it wasn't a success really at all. Nintendo is a video game company first and foremost. They can take risks. They can lose money. Nintendo can lose money until 2050 and still be in business.
Yes.
Sony can't because they spread themselves out. They're not just video games. They're consumer electronics across the board. Their shareholders are expecting something completely different than what Nintendo shareholders are expecting. And I don't think they would be happy at all if Sony decided that they were making another handheld console.
You'd love it, but you'd put them out of business. So.
Well, thanks.
Right, get out of here. Hey, how you doing?
Tough act to follow. Thanks for the punk. I'm concerned about you talking about one day him not being around.
You want to see a six-year-old Pat the NES punk video?
No. Yes. I was going to say, we haven't seen him for a third time. He hasn't been to Germany. We haven't met his evil twin. There's a lot of ideas out there, I think, left for you. We love hearing about Ian's day job. What I'd like to ask you is, can you tell us about your worst moment at a day job? Let's remind you of what else you could be doing instead of the punk. just a really bad one. Doesn't have to be the worst of all time.
I worked at Suncoast Motion Picture Company. Besides being sexually harassed at the ripe age of 19 by a 16-year-old.
What was his name?
I don't see right.
I'm sorry.
Weird crack.
But besides the fact also that she was the daughter of my fourth grade teacher. Anyway, so it was bad because it was. I don't like this guy either. I just.
I'm getting away pretty clean here.
I was making $5.05 an hour, minimum wage, or $5.15, whatever it was, and all I was doing was watching a store with VHS tapes, some DVDs because they were new, and when you work at a store getting paid minimum wage, you should be able to coast and do nothing. Instead, I was, told to go reorganize the sci-fi VHS section. When I'd done that the day before, so they'd play a trick on you and take two tapes out just to make sure you did it again. And they'd yell at you if you didn't. For $5.05 an hour in a mall VHS store. So that was horrific. Besides, being sexually harassed by a 16-year-old daughter.
Thank you.
All right. Yes, sir.
Other than the NWC card, what's the best part of your collection?
The best part of waking up is M82 in my cup. M82's up there. I have a soft spot for the Magical Chase. It's the feeling of Christmas with that game because I put it in the video and I bought it around Christmas. Mm-hmm. What would you say is the best game in my collection, Ian?
In your collection?
Yeah.
I don't know.
He doesn't care. He hates me.
I have no idea what the best thing in your collection is.
We got to move on. We got to do quicker. But yeah, M82? Is that fair?
That's fair. I think it's fair. Your neatest thing.
My neatest thing.
It's Nido Keen.
Okay, possibly bringing back some more repressed memories here. But do you guys have like any weird stories about borrowing games from someone back in the day or having someone borrow your games?
I lost my first copy of Rampage to some neighborhood asshole. I never got it back. And I got, like, I wanted to play, like, a baseball game in return. And I think that's how I got Bases Loaded, too. Neither of those games were great. But I do remember being upset as a kid that that guy never gave it back.
Did you confront him?
It was just...
Was he a bully?
No, he was just some shitty little kid.
Want me to beat him up? Let's find him.
What a bubble. Let's find a little punk.
His name was Justin. I don't remember his last name.
You get his last name. This is the age of internet shame. We're going to shame him on Twitter. He's going to get back that Rampage cartridge. I have no story. I was careful with my games. I didn't trust kids. After I got my baseball card stolen in the back of the bus when I was like, in first grade and was crying about it for 2 weeks into that, I never trusted any.
So you're a crier too?
Yeah, when I was first grade, yes.
Yes, sir. What's your favorite game of all time?
We don't like favorite questions.
But yeah, this is one I can answer easily. It's DuckTales. It's always been DuckTales. It'll never not be DuckTales.
That's my answer. It's so hard. I have favorites by genre. If you specified a genre, it would be easier.
What's your favorite genre?
When does this turn into bother Pat panel? Next, please.
What was your first game, Atari game you ever played?
First Atari game I ever played. My cousins wouldn't let me play their Atari 2600. They claimed I broke their joystick when I was 3. I think they just were selfish, and they don't want me playing them. But I remember them playing Adventure a lot. Spider-Man and Pitfall were the 3 games I remember playing while, like, you know, mid-80s. Before they had... I got an NES before they did. Little snot-nosed little...
Mine was my grandfather taught me how to play Pac-Man on the 5200, which is a good way to get frustrated, because Pac-Man's a maze game, and that joystick doesn't fucking center.
I'm surprised you're here.
I'm
surprised you're still here.
Yeah.
It was like starting you off by running by tying your shoes and teaching you to run. So here you go, kid.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm from Canada, and
Canada's lovely.
My friend asked me to pick him up a Virtual Boy, and I've literally never seen one in my whole life. And I find one, and people are giving me dirty looks like I'm an idiot for buying it. But is there any playable games for it that I should pick up for him? I got tennis.
I actually think a lot of the games are playable. They're just hard to look at for a long time.
You get a headache every 10 minutes. The Mario Clash is supposed to be pretty good.
Wario
is supposed to be pretty good.
I like Red Alarm.
I have not played the Japanese Bomberman game. Is that good?
I haven't played that.
There's
either.
A 3D Tetris. Is that good? There's five Japanese games that didn't come out here. Okay. But then we're really, at that point, you might as well just chuck it in the dumpster.
Right on. Thanks a lot.
But it's for your friend, though.
Yeah.
This well-dressed guy.
Thank you.
Make me feel like an asshole.
Dapper.
My question is actually, on the concept of retro gaming, do you feel like it's a static category, you know, given those original consoles, or as we all get tragically older, does retro just move up along with the age of the consoles?
We've talked about this on the podcast. We have differing opinions on this.
Retro moves up as time goes on.
I don't necessarily agree with that, but he does.
The original Nintendo become ancient gaming? While something else
no, because this is why I feel that it doesn't move up. Because you always have a retro feel of a game, and that retro feel of a game will not be how an Xbox game looks 20 years from now. They're not going to be targeting games look like Xbox games. They'll be targeting games look like Super Nintendo and Nintendo and Genesis. That's why I think retro gaming stops at like the Dreamcast. That's why I think it's like that.
I see both sides, but that's why I wanted to ask.
I don't like him, but he's good for the podcast. We're differing opinions.
Fucking blow me.
See? It's good for the podcast.
So, hello.
Hello, Flash. You gotta be quick, Flash.
Okay. So, you know your episode where you were playing Russian Attack and Rob was turning against you?
Mm-hmm.
What other character would you think would turn against you?
This happens every day.
Nintendo.
Nintendo. Nintendo character turning against me. Princess Tomato. Danny Sullivan.
Oh, Danny.
In a special episode, he turns against me. He comes to life out of TV and starts strangling me.
Pops out of your T-shirt.
He hates me and Ian for raising the price artificially. Of the game. I don't know. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, kid. I don't, that's all I got. Sorry. I could do better. Mr. Gimmick attacks me in a sequel episode.
But he misses like 5 times because that star is unwieldy.
2 more questions.
Hey, Pat. I just want to ask a quick question. With all the fame and fortune you're getting from being...
Yes.
What do your friends and family think about it? And has there ever been anyone close to you that's actually doubted you and tried to talk you into, you know, not doing it? And go Mets.
Let's go Mets go. This is going to get into really dark territory. My parents really never supported me in anything I wanted to do. let alone this. So whenever I said, you know, I quit my job 3 years of my day job because it was killing me. And no one really said, because I wasn't making money even to live 3 years ago. I was like, you know what I mean? It was just like a totally hobby. And so it was like doubtful what I could do. So it was just really, well, let me see what I can do. Let's see what I can do a year or two from now before my savings are gone. I got to sell my M82 and then, you know, throw myself into the river. That's basically what it was.
The M82 is the one thing you're keeping.
The M82 is going to be strapped to myself when I throw myself in the river.
There you go. With you to the end.
With you to the end. So, did I answer the question? I'm sort of like in this weird state of mind. I had like 4 hours sleep the past 2 nights. So.
Well, close enough.
Let's go Mets. Let's go Mets.
Go Mets.
Who's that Cubs fan?
Throw some dum-dums at him. Hey, Pat, I heard what you said about HP, so I was sad.
They contacted me last week.
And you have an HP JetDirect 4360?
No, they sent me a free printer cartridge. So they specially called me up. HP got word. If you didn't know, I had a big falling out with HP over their shitty DRM ink cartridges. They called me. They got word of the podcast segment. I didn't think I told you this. They called me. What was very nice. It's not like a big deal. Like, oh, we know. We understand. This is like, she was like, not just the customer service, the special customer service, like one below the president, I guess, of customer service. So I was like, I told the story. I said, hey, DRM on ink is kind of shitty. It doesn't make any sense. I know you may have to make money, but it sucks. So I'm thinking, they're going to send me a new printer. This is going to be great. We can send you one color ink cartridge and one black and white one. We can have that to you in a couple days. And I'm like,
yeah.
Fuck you. I didn't say that, but after all the pain and suffering, I got nice, shiny FedEx ink cartridges. They're going to see this clip and send you a couple more ink cartridges.
That's like finding a rat in your fast food and getting a coupon for a free small fry.
Wrong analogy, but it works.
We'll talk offline.
Okay, I'm sure they're a great company. You get 20 days off a year, great cafeteria downstairs.
Healthy options.
You know, you good 401k plan, half to 8%, put in 4, you get 6 back or whatever. Okay, I'm going to shut the hell up.
All right.
So we're out of time. Support by Podcast. We're going to be at our booth if you want to come say hi and hang out. And that's been the Completely Unnecessary Podcast for October 17th, 2015.
And we'll see you later.